This is The Rich Eisen Show
with guest host Tom Pelissero.
You said the first item up for bids involved the Bears.
Live from The Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Caleb's first game in Roma Dunze and the Bears faithful showing up. Maybe you put them in Detroit.
Earlier on the show, senior writer for NBA.com, Steve Ashburner. ESPN staff writer Dan Murphy. Free agent wide receiver Jarvis Landry. Coming up, NFL Network insider Ian Rappaport. And now, sitting in for Rich, it's Tom Pelissero.
Welcome back to the Rich Eisen Show. Tom Pelissero in for Rich. We'll also be back tomorrow. Ian Rappaport is going to join us here shortly as we continue the NFL discussion. We're going to play Start Bench Cut momentarily here. I've got some stories, the backstories of how the various quarterbacks went off the board in those first 12 picks. But before we get to that, lest a clip start circulating on the internet that seems like a Dan Cortez hit piece, I want to make abundantly clear, as we were saying in the break after this came up for reasons that I don't even recall, Dan Cortez was the epitome of cool in the 1990s, the mullet to the Oakleys to the general presence.
He was on Seinfeld.
He was on Seinfeld.
Like, come on.
Today. He was everything like that you aspired as like a 12-year-old to be. That was the coolest guy. He's wearing the bugaboo jackets, you know, with the collar flipped up and neon turquoise and everything. Like, that was the guy. Somehow you know Dan Cortez's brother, TJ Jefferson.
Yes. Well, I knew him. I knew him at the time. Back in Pittsburgh, I telemarketed, as I said, and his brother Vince, we worked at the same company for a little bit together.
So Dan Cortez's brother Vince, the telemarketer, who you recently found his business card?
I did. And that's why I said
Is he still a telemarketer?
Definitely not. I don't know what he's doing, but that's why I said I looked at Vince Cortez's Instagram about a month ago because I was going through an old box. I found this old business card, and I was like, oh, yeah, Vince, let me see if I could find him. So I went to Dan's Instagram to see if I could find him. I didn't. But, yeah, man, like I said, he was a guy from Pittsburgh, so his story got to be pretty well known. He came out to L.A., worked at MTV. He was a production assistant, and then somebody, a higher up at MTV, saw him and kind of saw he had personality and thought he could do the job. So he got auditioned, and he got some hosting gigs for MTV, as the story goes, which turned into, you know, doing the Rockin' Jocks and among other things.
That's how we got to Dan Cortez. I had actually forgotten it. We were talking about Rockin' Jock, whether or not we should have the 4-point play,
Dan Cortez story after so many years. But was something, as someone who came here from Pittsburgh, I always meant, you know, I remembered, and I started working at MTV, and I was like, man, could this happen to me? It didn't, but I thought about it.
All worked out great, TJ.
It did.
Dan Cortez, much more than a mimbo. All right, Brockman, time to play your favorite game here. Yeah, start bench cut. Bring it on.
Start bench cut. Play my music.
Start bench.
Just sit down and be quiet.
Or cut.
Get out.
That's new.
That's amazing. Tom, you're familiar with the game, you know, blank, marry, kill. Mm-hmm. Start bench cut is literally exactly the same. I'm going to give you three options. Start one.
Aren't they out of order though? Maybe.
Start one.
We're going to let it go. Yeah.
You get the idea.
I got the concept.
Okay. NFL Draft Edition. First quarterback to reach a Super Bowl. Let's go to the top three picks. Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May.
Well, I think the easy answer here is Caleb Williams. And that has as much to do with the situation he's in as it does his ability. We talked to coaches and scouts within the league. It's virtually unanimous. Most talented guy that there was in this draft. Yeah, he's got to learn to play on time. He's got to learn probably to be a little bit more within the structure of the offense.
Take singles. That's what everyone's saying.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable player. Can throw from any arm angle. Can run when he needs to. He's not the tallest guy, but he's thick enough that he can go in red zone and things like that when he needs to run. He can be a difference maker with that as well. But he also has the infrastructure around him. And that was a big part
of what the Bears did over the past several months, and a big part of what Caleb and his team and his dad, Carl, who's a longtime business disruptor and has really guided Caleb's career, they wanted to make sure that the investment and the infrastructure was there in Chicago. So what do the Bears do? They go out and hire an offensive coordinator they think is a really good fit. He's been versatile. Shane Waldron's worked with different types of quarterbacks, worked under McVay, worked under Bill Belichick. They thought that was the right guy. They signed DeAndre Swift, and they trade for Keenan Allen. They retain their offensive line coach, Chris Morgan, who's really good with the run game and can help out on that side of things. They've already got a top 10 caliber defense. And oh yeah, they used the number 9 pick on Rome Odunze. Now, is the protection unit going to be good enough for Caleb Williams so that he's not having to run for his life all the time, which he a lot of times was at USC last year? We'll see on that. We'll see how quickly it all comes together, because when you go around on, you know, showing off your phone that says, I'm going to win 8 Super Bowls and beat Tom Brady, you have put all the pressure on yourself. But Caleb's had that pressure on himself since he was 10 years old. And him and his dad set out the goal. We're going to make him the number 1 pick. They did it. A lot of people make that, say we're going to do that. They did it. And everything that they did over the last dozen years had a singular focus on, let's make him the number 1 pick. Now it's okay. The Bears got him on board. Was this his first choice? Have you gone back a year ago? Probably not. But they got him on board. He can be the biggest thing there since Michael Jordan. Drake May going to New England. He needs some time to sit. And they need time to build up the team around him. New coaching staff with Gerard Mayo, a new de facto GM with Elliott Wolf. They know this is a ground up type of rebuild, but they didn't want to miss on. They did not want to miss out on getting the quarterback. And then with the Commanders, again, it's a team that's got a ways to go. I mean, they traded Montez Sweat to the Bears. They traded Chase Young, two of your pass rushers. You got day 2 picks for them last year. They've got a long way to go as well. I would say just from a stability standpoint, assuming that things go as they should this year and the Bears get better, they should be a playoff contender in their minds this year, but also the parts that are around them, I would say that the answer there just has to be logically Caleb Williams.
What about the bench and the cut?
Bench and cut. Sorry, I got that was a long soliloquy there, and I forgot the name of the segment. I would say, so cut's the worst, right?
Cut's the worst.
Yeah.
Cut's 3.
Because, again, the order is a little off from how the game normally goes. I would say they're in that order. I would say the bench is Jaden Daniels just because he's such a dynamic playmaker that you can see him doing different things. He's got to make sure he doesn't get himself cut by getting hit the way that he did in college. Right. With Drake May, it's not that, you know, he's clearly the third talent. There were, like I said earlier, there was a pretty even split talking to NFL people. Some really like Jaden Daniels, some really like Drake May. Drake May, though, is the most unknown. Drake May is the one you have the least feel for it, just because he's probably the furthest away from actually getting on the field.
We talked yesterday and during Overreaction about how many primetime games are the Bears going to get this year, and should they be primetime week 1? Just showcase Caleb right away.
I mean, again, they've put all the pressure on themselves. They've done everything to put themselves in that position.
Will the league do that, though? Maybe throw them against Houston on Monday night, week 1.
How about Bears-Vikings out of the gate? I know they like to kind of have different types of matchups in week 1, but you put that in one of those Monday night football windows. I mean, there's all kinds of great storylines around the NFL. I don't know who's going to be, I don't have off the top of my head who is due to play who. But if you're talking about division matchups potentially, which sometimes I know they shy away from, but if you put a division matchup on there, the Vikings with J.J. McCarthy potentially as the starting quarterback against Caleb Williams, that's one of the better ones you're going to get.
All right, let's start bench cut. Number 2, Mikey, play the music. Let's go. Edge rushers. Didn't go to 15 this year. Mm-hmm. That was kind of crazy. Which one gets double-digit sacks this season as a rookie? Latu versus Turner.
I'm going to say Leatu Latu with double-digit sacks this year. The questions on Latu were almost exclusively medical. If you polled people within the league, and I talked to a lot of coaches, a lot of scouts about this, a lot of people would tell you Latu was the best pass rusher. And if not for a really significant medical history.
And he retired at one point.
He retired. He had to see a bunch of doctors just to get medical clearance. The Colts were confident enough, and a lot of teams were confident, that they would be willing to take him. Your concern is not, okay, is he, you know, it's not like a knee where he's coming back from, is he going to be okay? No, this guy's ready to go. You are just making an educated medical as well as football decision that we think he has trained himself well enough. We feel good about the neck. We feel good about the body that he's going to be out there. He should be the best one right out of the gate because he is the most dynamic of those guys. I would say let's bench Dallas Turner. He was somebody who was a little bit polarizing. I talked to teams that had both Jervis and Latu above Dallas Turner. Mm. But the Vikings gave up, a bunch. Because they had already moved up to 23, right. And then they gave up the additional picks to move up and go get him here. Him going into that place and being able to play opposite the pass rusher that the Vikings signed in free agency from Houston, I think he's in a pretty good spot.
Did they have to do that? Would he have been there at 23, or did they have to go up to 17 to get him?
I mean, realistically, pass rushers don't slide. Once the first one comes off the board, you're figuring Dallas Turner is probably gonna go sooner than later here. It's kind of the same argument for, well, did you have to trade up to 10 to go get J.J. McCarthy? Well, if you're right. within striking distance and you've got a certain grade on a guy, you give up a mid-round
just
pick or two
and
just go find a way to do it. Cut would be Jared Verse. That's not any knock on Jared Verse. I just think that, if you're stacking those three guys up, who's in the best situations? I put Verse number 3.
Okay, great. Last one. Let's talk wide receivers. Okay, wide receiver not named Marvin Harrison. Let's take him out of it.
Okay.
The next three guys to be a Pro Bowler this year as a rookie.
Ooh.
Malik Nabers, Rome Odunze, young lad McConkey.
This is a really tricky one because Malik Nabers is going to be catching balls from Daniel Jones, quite possibly, or Drew Lock.
Yeah.
Rome Odunze is going to be catching balls from Caleb Williams. Ladd McConkey is going to be catching balls from Justin Herbert. There's clearly a vision that the Chargers have for Ladd McConkey in that offense that Greg Roman is running, which is going to be very, run heavy, you would anticipate, based on his history. Even though they haven't spent big on running backs, they brought in J.K. Dobbins, they brought in Gus Edwards. It feels like when you trade up to 35 to take Ladd McConkey, and really, medical was part of the reason that Ladd was even available at that point. So there were some teams that had flagged his back. He had the ankle last year, didn't play his best. I kind of think Pro Bowl is so subjective because you had a fan vote involved in there and everything else.
Sure.
I can totally see it being Ladd McConkey. I'll give him the start. Rome Odunze is going to be competing for targets.
The third guy.
With
right,
Keenan
really,
Allen,
right,
with DJ right. Moore. So let's put him in the... Let's put him in the cut category, just strictly based upon Malik Nabers is clearly the one. Ladd McConkey, who joins a wide receiver depth chart with Quentin Johnston. Mike Williams isn't there anymore. Keenan Allen's not there anymore.
Josh Palmer.
So I'm going to say start Ladd McConkey, bench Malik Nabers, cut Rome Odunze. Even though I think that Rome Odunze, when all is said and done, if you're talking about these three guys, he could be the best one. I just don't know if we're talking about Pro Bowl as a rookie, that the ball's going his direction
right.
enough for that to be able to happen. How would you stack those ones up, Brockman?
Good question. I guess it all comes down to quarterbacks. I kind of think you nailed it. Rome, as amazing as he is, and a very special talent, special player, great guy, strikes me in the Jackson Smith and Jigba categories last year, where he's kind of the third guy on the depth chart. In a way. So where are those targets going to come from? Does he catch more than 60 balls next year? Seems like a lot for the third wide receiver. I think
you
kind of have
Do you have three? Do you have 360 catch guys on that team?
Yeah.
I mean, if you do, that probably means that we're still seeing Caleb Williams running all over the place and just chucking it around, and they haven't established a run game. I mean, part of the reason, again, that they kept Chris Morgan and they hired Shane Waldron was they want to run the football a lot. So Henry
Swift.
I don't think that any quarterback, you don't want any rookie quarterback throwing the ball 500 times. You just don't.
Yeah,
you'd like to have a level of balance there. Now, if they're in a bunch of shootouts, he's going to have to do that. But with Matt Eberflus coordinating that defense, you are hoping you're going to be able. I mean, look what the Bears did at the end of the year with the Lions. I mean, they made them earn every yard. Yeah. I thought that was the most impressive thing about how the Bears finished. I want to say they finished 5-3 down the stretch, even though they were still kind of, offensively, they had a lot of challenges through the course of the season. And that was not all on the coaching staff. Luke Getsy's a fine coach. He's going to do good work with the Raiders. It was just they were in a certain style of game. But once they got Montez Sweat and they were able to play a more aggressive defensive style and they had people who get after the pass rusher, you saw them really turn the corner. I think the NFC North quite possibly is the most fascinating division in the league this year because you've got the Lions, who are everybody's darling, and Dan Campbell and that group, Brad Holmes, have built a team that the city has rallied behind. It's built in the city's image. You had 800,000 people close to it out in the streets for the NFL draft, listening to seventh round picks being read the other day. You've got the Packers, who triple down on the running back room. They lost Aaron Jones, obviously, in free agency, but they released him after agreeing to terms with Josh Jacobs. But you still have Jacobs, you got A.J. Dillon re-signed, and then you go out and you draft Marshawn Lloyd in the third round. They want to run the crap out of the ball, and they've got Matt LaFleur calling the plays. He's one of the best play callers in the league with a young, exciting receiver group around Jordan Love. I mean, that's a group that should scare you. The Vikings already had the infrastructure with Kevin O'Connell calling the plays there with Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison and TJ Hockenson, and they add Aaron Jones to that mix. They've had challenges personnel-wise on defense. We'll see this year. Yeah. They obviously changed some things over. Danielle Hunter's not there anymore. The corners, the defensive backs, Harrison Smith is back, but there's still a lot of transition there. But Brian Flores calling the plays. They should be competent. And then you got the Bears that just added Caleb Williams and Rome Odunze and signed DeAndre Swift and traded for Keenan Allen. That division, week in and week out, should be one of the divisions where every game is can't miss. Now, did I say that 2 years ago about the AFC West? And then that ended up being a complete train wreck on multiple fronts? Yes, I did. But it certainly seems like the quarterbacks in that division are going to carry a lot of this moving forward here. And I still want to get to, maybe we can do this tomorrow as well, but just kind of the stories through how all those quarterbacks landed. Yeah. But the Vikings alone with J.J. McCarthy and kind of the poker game that they had going once Drake May, who they're trying to go up and get at three, once he was off the board, and believing, Kwesi Adofo-Mensah believing he didn't think the Giants would actually take J.J. McCarthy at six. Because if they take him at six, and then...
Then what do they do?
Well, and then you have Michael Penix coming off at eight. My understanding was Penix and McCarthy were pretty similar on the Vikings board. They would have taken either one of them at number 11.
Would they have traded up to eight, you think?
If J.J. McCarthy's off the board at six,
or
if
seven,
they lose that poker game,
yeah.
Can you trade up to seven and potentially go get the guy?
Right.
Does the team at seven even want to move out of that pick? I mean, you got a lot of questions here, but they stood in, and then in the end, once Penix goes eight, the Bears aren't going to let you trade up to nine. You don't take any chances whether there was really somebody trying to trade into 10 or not. Just don't take chances. You give up another pick or two and you move into 10 and go get your guy. But that's a high wire act that they had to pull off here throughout the course of the top of that draft. We didn't have the trades the way that some people thought, but that was in large part because there weren't those teams at 4 and 5 that were willing to move up. The Giants at 6 were. They simply weren't going to give up anything close to what the Patriots wanted. The Patriots never got a real offer. They take your new favorite guy, Drake May.
Love
now
Drake.
We just got to get you some duct tape like everybody at the
love
draft and a Sharpie to convert your Mac Jones jersey.
That's right. Not my Mac Jones jersey. I'm an adult.
You didn't?
I bought one for my son last year.
You've never owned a jersey?
No. I don't wear a jersey. I'm a grown man.
I mean, you've got a Red Sox hat that you wear every day. You've got a mini Patriots helmet on your desk.
Yep. Patriots legends.
So you draw the line of having another man's name on your back.
I also just don't. I don't like that. I don't like wearing jerseys. I don't look good in them.
Yeah. So just say that. Don't be like, I'm a grown man. I don't wear jerseys.
Yeah.
Like,
there's a lot of grown men who wear jerseys.
There's
a couple hundred thousand.
There's one in this room.
Yeah. Exactly.
TJ's gonna be wearing one tomorrow.
Yeah.
I probably won't. But
it's just not my thing.
All right, let's take a break here. Ian Rappaport, NFL Network Insider, my fellow insider, another member of the Insiders, joins us right after this. Draft stories coming up on The Eisen Show.
Hey, folks, it's time for the NFL Draft, which means for me, I need a good night's sleep, because if I don't have one, I'm just not myself. You know the deal. You know exactly how important it is to have quality sleep. It's a game changer for all of us. So Sleep Number helps me. My Sleep Number setting is 60. My wife's setting is 70. We both get a great night's sleep because we could adjust the firmness of our mattress on each side. Improve your quality sleep because Sleep Number learns how you sleep thanks to their smart beds and provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
I think Patrick Mahomes is going to lead you onto the field next year.
It's going to be weird getting into a huddle without Alex Smith too.
Because you did not obviously play in the last game of the year, right?
No, I did not.
Okay, so that was where Mahomes was out there.
Yeah.
What are your feelings now that Alex Smith has been unofficially traded away, to use your phraseology here?
It's awkward. It's awkward. I honestly don't know how to really accept it. I mean, through my entire career, you can't say Travis Kelce without Alex Smith. I mean, he's been my quarterback. He's been the guy that's arguably I owe a lot of my success to him, you know? So it's going to be awkward going into a huddle, like I said, with anybody but Alex, but I know Pat is ready for the opportunity.
Sure.
He's taken a lot of mental reps and a lot of notes from Alex and how this thing should be ran. Alex ran it to an absolute T this past season. And, you know, obviously everyone's excited to see what he can do.
We had Chris Harris of the Broncos on game day morning in the playoffs. And he said when he was looking at film of Mahomes, and he played a couple of series against him,
yeah,
he says this kid's got some serious ability. The Broncos said that.
Yeah.
Have you seen anything of that note yet?
Without a doubt. I mean, what he does in practice is it's fun to watch him in practice because kind of he's on the scout team, kind of just being a backyard quarterback, throwing it all every way imaginable you can think of, sidearm, underhand, putting the ball anywhere on the field. So it was definitely fun watching him in that regard. And when he played against the Broncos, I mean, he had a lot of footballs where he put it right on the money.
Right.
And in crucial times and crucial moments. So, I mean, it's like I said, it's going to be exciting to see where he can go with it because the expectation is definitely high.
Welcome back to another Rich Eisenless show. I am in for Rich. I am Tom Pelissero.
It's jarring when you say it that way.
I mean, he's not dead. He's taking a little break, right? He's at the new fronts.
New fronts.
New fronts.
Yeah.
Roku new front. The old fronts, the new fronts.
Still this. Who came up with that?
Meet the new front, same as the old front.
We may be on right now in the new fronts. Yeah. We could be on TV at the new fronts.
Is this, are we are they watching us and talking about, hi. Yeah. Hey, we love Roku. We love the Rich Eisen show.
Of course we do.
Hello from to New Frontville in New York.
New Frontville.
Oh, is it because of New York?
We don't know if it's N. Is it NU?
Streaming. Or New Frontier.
Yeah, it's like new metal. It's the Limp Bizkit of upfronts. that's what it is.
Above the two dots above
that's
the U.
That's like what I want to know. New front.
Like a what? Right.
Text Rich.
Is that what it's called? Please, we got rich. Bizkit, we got corn, and we got the Rich Eisen
is that,
show.
Is that
that's
what it's
that's the lineup
the
today.
Thing with the two dots.
Text Rich, please.
Papa Roach. We got everybody.
Cut my life into pieces. Okay, come on.
No, keep going, Brockman.
Let's talk to Ian.
Maybe not.
You guys are idiots. You literally are idiots.
All right.
I'm actually not the idiot.
I started
right
this,
now.
By the way.
It's
usually my fault. All right, let's bring in our guest. He's an NFL Network insider. So am I. Another piece of the insiders coming to us because he appears to be headed out to the golf course or just came off of it. Ian Rappaport. Yeah. Just came off it. Okay, how'd you shoot, Ian?
Mediocre. Mediocre. But, you know, first couple rounds, my first post draft round.
Ooh.
I'm getting back into it, but, you know, some good moments, some not as good moments. Good start. Good start.
Ian's got some of the best old man game. I think he's only a year or two older than me, but his ability to hit, like, he's got the thing where every club goes 180 yards, like driver,
that's the
180
best.
Yards straight. The five iron goes like 175, but he hits the ball straight almost every time. I can drive it 100 yards past him, but it might go 20 yards off the fairway, which is kind of, you know, the point of golf, Ian, of course, is to hit the ball toward the hole. It's the toward the hole part. That's the part
that's
I'm missing.
That's the key part. That's the key part.
Yeah. So we were both at the draft the entire week in Detroit. There's a lot of things I want to get into from that. But let's start with a story you and I broke very early yesterday morning. Ezekiel Elliott is back with the Dallas Cowboys. I we'll see how TJ Jefferson, who's a big Cowboys fan, feels about this. But I thought this was interesting, Ian, because the whole offseason, everybody, and including in the replies to our story, is just saying, oh, all in, Cowboys all in. They're all in on 2016 with Zeke. I think one of the things that people missed was this deal was effectively done. They had the framework of the deal in place last week. It's why they didn't reach for a running back. They had so many needs through the course of this offseason because they lost their left tackle and their center. They lost two of their pass rushers. They were filling those other needs. My question to you is, from our perspective, from your perspective, what do we make of the Cowboys this offseason and where they're at for 2024?
I mean, to me, it's a pretty normal offseason. And I know that sounds weird because everybody's losing their damn minds about how they didn't sign anyone. But this is kind of what the Cowboys do. They draft, they develop, they get very good players. They pay them a lot of money, their own players usually, and they don't sign a ton of free agents. Like, yeah, sometimes they will sign like a, you know, a stopgap guy, like a, you know, Stephon Gilmore or something like that. But it's like this year they're getting Trayvon Diggs back. They don't need a Stephon Gilmore. And look, maybe they might sign someone like that anyway. I'm just saying, like, I don't know how many holes they have as a roster. They just did it in a way that everybody would like to, because you'd like to draft guys, develop them, pay the really good ones, let the ones who are just pretty good go to get overpaid in free agency, replace them with younger guys who are also very good but much cheaper, and then do the cycle all over again. Now, the fact that they didn't have a running back until Zeke signed, like, okay, that's fine, but they also have drafted players that will help make whoever's there as a running back much better, which is some good offensive linemen. So, you know, everybody's losing their minds, and I feel like the fact that the all-in thing came out gives everyone something to, like, hang on to. I just don't know that it's that much different from how the Cowboys usually operate in the offseason, and then they'll pay some of their key players a lot of money, and then some of this will make sense.
Everyone also was losing their minds about Michael Penix to Atlanta at number 8. I think that that's fair to say a lot of people within the league. Also, if you're talking about the biggest surprise in round one, I texted a ton of people. It was so consistent. Everyone's just going, Michael Penix. Totally mind-blowing that they actually did it. You were on an island. In fact, you were getting shouted down by the guy who normally sits in the seat on the broadcast who didn't want to hear your Michael Penix explanation because it was so, in Rich's mind, absurd. Take me through the Falcons' mentality, why this pick occurred within the framework of course, you just gave Kirk Cousins $100 million guaranteed like 6 weeks before.
Yeah, I am on an island. I was also on an island on Jordan Love being a fantastic pick by Brian Gutekunst and the Green Bay Packers. And on other digital shows that I may appear on regularly, they routinely beat me up for that, and it looks pretty good now. One thing about Penix first, before I get to your question, you know, I talked to a lot of people, a lot of coordinators, a lot of general managers and assistant GMs and people who do this evaluation for a living, right? Everybody loved Michael Penix. And I'm not saying he was like the number one pick, because obviously he was not. I was a little surprised he went as early as he did. But especially coordinators just loved him, right? I mean, the way he threw from the pocket was compared to a left-handed Justin Herbert. Easily a top five arm right now in the NFL. And as far as a leader, just a really cool, confident dude. Everybody loved Michael Penix. It's just they all sort of decided that he was behind the other guys. And I kept trying to be like, well, why? And they're like, well, you know, I guess the injury concerns. And I'm like, okay, I get it. If he tears his ACL again, that would be bad. But everybody did love him. As far as the Falcons go, it's basically this. There's nothing more important than quarterback. And if they are good this year, and I think they're going to be good because they have a good roster and they have a totally fine, very productive starting quarterback. You know, Cousins is probably not a top 10 quarterback, but, you know, maybe he's close. Maybe he's 15th or something like that, 12th. I don't know, whatever you think of him. Has been very productive throughout the course of his career. You're not going to be picking 8th ever again. So basically what this was is the drafting version of signing a player to an extension. It's saying, we're going to lock in your money now, but it's really going to be like for a year from now or like 2 years from now. So when the Eagles signed Devontae Smith to an extension, he had 2 years left, but they give him the money now. Like they say, we're going to do the extension now. We're just going to lock it in, and then you're good. that's basically what the Falcons did at quarterback, which is to say, we're getting our franchise guy. We're just going to put him over here for a little bit, and then we're going to play with this other guy for the next 2 years.
So a couple of things there. On Penix, I found him to be a polarizing prospect because there also were people who said, like, you just can't play with that style of quarterback because he is so pocket dependent. It's got to be clean for him. When he's in rhythm, he's really, really good.
And the national championship game, sorry to interrupt, national championship game where he was getting a lot of pressure.
Exactly.
So anyway, go on.
Right. So Alabama, you know, was collapsing the pocket. And that's, you know, sometimes your offensive line does get their butts kicked and you do have to play from a, you know, a dirty pocket. There were also a lot of people who just said he's the best pure passer when you talk about dicing people up. I was going through this with somebody very familiar with the Vikings draft philosophy and going through all the knocks on him. And, you know, here's what people are saying. It's got to be clean for him. And that person goes, this is before the draft. Yeah, sounds a lot like Kirk Cousins, which is true. That's kind of been Kirk Cousins through his career, which is when he's got time in the pocket, he can eat you up. When he's got to move, that's where you kind of don't know whether things happen. So obviously the Falcons, if they believe in Kirk Cousins, it's easy to see why they believe in Michael Penix in terms of the skill set. Where I get lost with the Jordan Love comparisons that many people have made is the Aaron Rodgers relationship was deteriorating in Green Bay already prior to the Jordan Love pick. They didn't know from year to year, was he going to come back? He was thinking about whether he was going to move on. And he'd been there for so long. This is much closer to if the Jets last year had traded for Aaron Rodgers and then used their first round pick to draft a quarterback. If they had gone out and said, hey, we're going to take one here, that's a lot closer to it because you had this entire, the good vibes, and obviously it was on Hard Knocks and everything. I know how it ended last season, four snaps later, but this is Kirk Cousins. He's on stage whipping up the crowd. Yeah, here we go. And then an hour later, they call him and saying, we're taking a quarterback. It just creates, in my mind, in the mind of a lot of other people within the league, a unique dynamic. And I'm sure Raheem Morris and Terry Fontenot thought through this, that what they're going to have to deal with. But instead of just, hey, when you're going through the lumps early on with a first-time play caller and Zach Robinson and a new quarterback and all these new weapons, hey, all right, they're going to get better. Now the crowd's going to be chanting for Michael Penix. They weren't chanting for Taylor Heinicke. It's just, it's one more layer to this. It totally changes, in my mind, the vibe around that team and kind of what the storylines are going to be as we head into the season.
Yeah, and that's okay. I'm fine with all of that because, I mean, look, yes, the Rodgers relationship was deteriorating. Not as the Jordan Love's draft certainly helped.
Played a role. Went further down, yeah.
He was very mad, definitely very mad. Now, Jordan Love being an awesome dude probably helped it just make it tolerable, but he was very mad. He went out and had two MVP seasons and then left, and now Jordan Love took over. So is it tense? Yeah, it's tense. When you are a super competitive person in a super competitive environment, it can be tense. And tense is okay. As long as you're upfront and honest, tense is okay. And I think it's going to help him play better. And I think it's going to be awkward. But in the end, no more awkward than a newly signed quarterback getting gold teeth and posting a picture about it before he signs with the Falcons. Like, that was pretty awkward, and everyone survived that. The other thing I would say is if the Jets had taken a quarterback last year, just for the record, I also would have been fine with it. I really would have. I would have said, you know
what?
You
give up.
I don't care. Look, you know how much Aaron Rodgers cost the Jets. You know how much Kirk Cousins cost the Jets. Anything to avoid that again, I am for. That's it. That's the argument.
But think about this. All right, let's say, and this is all projection, right? They think, I mean, they were very upfront about it. I thought remarkably so when Terry Fontenot and Raheem Morris kept saying, not only are we going to be good this year, we're not going to be drafting high ever again. That's how good we're going to be, which is saying a lot when you haven't been in the playoffs in quite a while. When you've used now four consecutive top eight picks on skill position players, which is the first time in NFL history that's happened. I also can see a situation where, okay, let's say midseason, they're 4-4. They're 4-5. Whatever. They're in the middle of the pack. Not only are you getting those chances for Penix, but aren't we also, Ian, talking about, do they move on from Kirk Cousins after the season? They're paying him $67.5 million this season. He's got a no-trade clause, so he can scuttle anything that would happen. But there's a very real conversation that might take place that if they're not a playoff team, if they're not going, you know, winning playoff games here, do they move on at that point if Michael Penix is everything that they think he is in order to draft him at number eight?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I really do. I think that's an excellent point. And here's what I would say. if that happens, and if the crowd is chanting for Penix and you're 4-4 is sort of in between because you can get better, but let's say you're like 3-5 or Cousins, let's say it's last year's Vikings team where Cousins is putting up good numbers, but you're not winning a lot of games. Then do you play Penix? If he's good enough, then maybe you do. But that actually proves my point, because then you could theoretically trade Cousins to a place he would want to go to the next season. And then you have your franchise guy there and it's no problem. You just move on to the next, you know, the next generation of this, and you have a guy and that's it.
You just you've taken the stable ground that Kirk Cousins was standing on, a guy who wanted the commitment. That's why he's no longer the Vikings quarterback. That ground now is very unstable. Oh, yeah, it's not about, I keep seeing see people say like, well, who cares about his feelings? It's not about feelings. He's got 100 million reasons to be like, okay with all this and figure he's just going to play well enough. It's about the environment around everybody else. Kirk will be fine. Kirk reached out to Michael Penix. They will get along fine. This is about what the dynamic is around the team, environmental factors. That's what they're going to be challenged by. The only other pick that I really sensed there was a lot of surprise about, Ian, from round one, in terms of a name that went in round one, was Ricky Pearsall to the 49ers. That obviously comes amidst conversations, teams inquiring about both Brandon Ayuk and Deebo Samuel. Round one comes and goes. Any possibility they could have gotten a two this year plus something else, that comes and goes. What are the odds, if any, in your mind that Brandon Ayuk and or Deebo Samuel are not members of the 49ers week one of 2024?
Week one of 2024, it looks like they both will be. Now, look, crazy things can happen. Someone loses a star receiver. They decide to give the 49ers something of value for this year that they need. Theoretically, it's possible that he could get traded. But, you know, the main problem is always sort of the problem with a good team trading someone. It's like you can't replace him now. So, like, if the 49ers wanted to trade Deebo Samuel, say, or if the Bengals wanted to trade T. Higgins, like, you can do it. You can get really good value. It just won't help you right now. So, like, for the Bengals, I don't even ask about the Bengals, but for the Bengals and T. Higgins, like the Bengals are a team that could win the Super Bowl this year, right? The 49ers are a team that could win the Super Bowl. So, like, what makes sense for them to move on from someone really good if it hurts your chances to win a Super Bowl this year? I think, you know, as it seems, I would say both these guys are probably coming back. And the more calls I made, like, I say at the beginning, I saw the Ricky Pearsall pick, which, you know, I think most people were surprised it went in the first round, but I trust Kyle Shanahan more than a lot of people on offensive skill guys. But a lot of people were surprised it went in the first round. But then it's like, all right, well, obviously this means they're trading whatever. The more calls I made, the more people kept going, well, yeah, but why would they trade him? And I'm like, well, that's a good point.
Good football players, nothing that can help you right now. So you load up, and then a year from now when you're potentially moving on, they still want to get a deal done with Ayuk. Maybe you're moving on from one of them if that doesn't take place. But, yeah, there's really no time stamp on this. The next time stamp, just so people understand, like the offseason, nothing really happens that matters between now and sort of mini camp in mid-June, which a bunch of teams don't even do anymore. Really, the next time stamp is 3 months away. It's the last week of July when teams are reporting to training camp, and if there's any contractual issues, whatever, that are going to play out, that's really kind of the aiming point. After that, the next aiming point's the start of the season. So we've made it, Ian. We've made it to the offseason. Last thing before I let you get back to the driving range to fix whatever wasn't going right today. Anything else? Any other surprises? Any other things? You're there on TV for all 7 rounds. We're there the entire week. Anything else you find your brain still wondering about in terms of a surprise pick, a trade that didn't happen? Anything else that's kind of sticking with you coming out of the draft?
Yeah, I think the main thing, I mean, there's so many things. And what I'm going to do, and I know you do this too, is at some point I'm going to go over my notes and be like, what did I miss? What signals were there? Who lied to me? And I don't think there was a lot of that, but there's a lot of lying by omission. I always look forward to that every year. But I think my biggest thing would be, were the Patriots ever really considering trading number 3? And I know they took – I mean, I know the offers were real. I don't know if I was in their shoes, would I have taken any of them, but maybe I would have. Like, it was not – nothing was embarrassing. They're all real offers. No one would have fought to the Patriots for taking any of those offers. Would you agree?
It never sounded like, listen, they had the Giants and the Vikings that both made offers. The Vikings were persistent all the way up until the Patriots were on the clock. But no, I did not get the sense that there was ever a real consideration. The Patriots seemed to be figuring, okay, we can get a haul, but then what? We still don't have a quarterback. If we're going down, we're getting out of the range of the guys that we perceive to be the franchise quarterbacks. So, yeah, we can pick up extra picks to build the roster. But next year's quarterback class, based on, this isn't just the Patriots, but a lot of teams say it's not the best. It's not, certainly not as deep as this one in terms of having six or seven guys that people thought potentially could be starters. So we're going to stand in, and if you don't give us everything, we're just going to make the pick.
Right, and this, that would be my thing, is like how, like, they get the offers on the clock, and I know they got the Giants offer a little before, and the Vikings made another run on the clock. Were they ever like, all right, let's consider this, or were they the whole time like, we're just curious what offers we're going to get, but Drake May is there and we have to take him? That's what I will probably never know. And I do believe there was like earnest interest and curiosity from the Patriots about what offers they get. But I never quite got the sense they were really close to actually doing anything besides picking Drake May.
We went from like it was 100% the Bears were going to take the number one pick to like, I think it was 95% that the Commanders were going to do. We're talking about like 2 months before the draft. To like the Patriots were truly, I think, 50-50. But the more teams called and the more teams inquired, the more they got the sense you're probably going to have to go into that next bucket. And then in the end, three more guys come off the board by number 12. And then we had the longest drought in NFL draft history until the next quarterback was taken. Ian, thank you very much for the time. I'm sure I'll be, you'll be probably bugging me about something later. So I'll talk to you.
Sounds right. All right. Bye. Thanks for having me.
That is NFL Network insider Ian Rappaport. You got something over there, Brockman, or are you just waving a fly away?
I was waving goodbye to Ian. I was just waving goodbye.
Okay, you seem to be clearing the air here. Let's clear the air on some of those other quarterback things. We just talked about one of them here. Yeah. Let's do that on the other side of this break. Six quarterbacks in the first 12 picks. How did they get there? How close were we to something else happening? We'll discuss it on The Rich Eisen Show.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a
likelihood. So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Well, I mean, and that's why I'm wondering why you would go by the name of Matty Ice, Matt. That's why that's a beer-infused nickname, and it doesn't fit anymore. So. Would you agree it doesn't fit anymore, Matt?
Is the Mattrel coming back, or are we making a push for the Mattrel here?
No, I'm pointing out that certain nickname that you've had for a long time.
I like beer. Out there, I do like beer.
Right. So when it comes to it, though, you're not slamming them back, right? Is what you're saying?
No, I guess I'm drinking responsibly.
Okay. Something that would be a natural light of some sort, Matt. What are you drinking? What are you drinking?
It's been a long time.
See, you keep making my point. Why won't you take the Mattrel from me, Matt? Why won't you do it? I mean, how many times do I have to ask? How many times do I have to ask?
There's just nobody else wants it.
Are you aware I offered it to Stafford, your buddy?
Is that right?
Yes.
He didn't take it either.
Well, I mean, he...
That's a no, Matt.
Hold on a minute. Excuse me. Hold on. I gave him full disclosure that it was a retread and that you had rejected it. Because I know you guys talk. I know you guys are tight, right?
He forgot to mention it to me the last time I saw him.
I can't believe that wasn't top of mind for him. Okay, so just on behalf of all my loved ones who are cringing right now, just tell me to move on, Matt, and I'll move on. Just tell me to move on.
Rich, you got to move on. You got to move on. I love you, but you got to move on.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you so much. You.
Even if I gave you a T-shirt or anything? All right, Matt, I can take a hint after 9 years or so.
A Welcome back to the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network. I am sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk, furnished by Grainger. With supplies and solutions for every industry, Grainger has the right product for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. We were talking about the quarterbacks in the last segment with Ian Rappaport. And there's a lot of those untold stories about like the maneuverings that happen up there at the top of the draft. When you have 6 quarterbacks go in the first 12 picks, certainly that's the case. I think that the Vikings process of getting J.J. McCarthy is instructive of how complicated things can get in the draft. So Caleb Williams is always going number one, right?
Yep.
The Bears certainly aren't going to trade Caleb Williams to Minnesota. So now you know, all right, cross one name off the board. Jaden Daniels, realistically, is probably always going to Washington. They weren't going to move off the pick.
When did that switch? Because it seemed like, you know, for a year it was Caleb and Drake May. And then Jaden Daniels, about halfway through last year, was like, maybe teams could get him at the end of the first round. And then he won the Heisman Trophy, and it was like, oh, he's going in the top three.
Yeah, I mean, it was Jaden Daniels. Nobody had, if you talk to scouts, nobody had him as a first-round player. Probably not a top three-round player. But he did put on some weight. He put a lot of time in. They have this virtual reality program there that he put a ton of hours into get better. And scouts say it was legit. It was his work ethic. He put it together. There was a lot of stuff that happened at Arizona State. He was not a popular guy. His mom was not popular with that program by the end. There were just all these different dynamics. He said he was coming back. Then the NCAA stuff came out. And then all of a sudden he's transferring. All that happened, but he flourished in the environment at LSU. And last year, I want to say he had 40 touchdown passes, which was over double any other year in his career. He had the best possible season at the best possible time. And so Jaden Daniels, when you dug in, now they seriously considered other options here. I said it, and I know a lot of Commanders fans picked up on it a month or so ago at the league meeting, that when I talked to people there, they believed the Commanders would take, potentially, J.J. McCarthy. And they continued to explore J.J. McCarthy. He had an unbelievable pro day at Michigan. The Commanders were well represented there among a lot of other teams because Michigan had like 75 guys in this draft. Mm-hmm. And Rich celebrated every single one of them on TV with the fight song. And so there was real consideration of that, which is why when they brought in that group of quarterbacks, including Penix and J.J. and Drake May and Jaden Daniels for the now infamous Topgolf trip, it made sense because they were really still working through exactly what they were going to do. But people within the league always believed that with Cliff Kingsbury's offense, with just the dynamic abilities of Jaden Daniels, he was probably going to. So cross those two off. Three is where it got interesting because the Patriots were listening. They were taking calls. They were willing to hear, okay, what can we potentially get for this pick? And so the Vikings, as well as the Giants, were both involved. I'm trying to trade up. For the Vikings, the target would have been Drake May. That would have been the guy just because the traits are there. They were high on J.J. McCarthy, too. They were high on Michael Penix. But Drake May, just because of the height, weight, speed, the arm talent, all those things. If you can, the accuracy is a knock on Drake May. He's not naturally accurate, so there's going to be a project there in terms of mechanical things and whatnot. But they wanted to target him and try to go up and get him. They hired Josh McCown to coach Drake May in high school. They simply couldn't do it. They called. They were trying to make offers leading up to the draft. They were doing it again during draft week. They put in one more Hail Mary on the clock with the Patriots. But at that point, New England had already resolved. We're taking Drake May. Now things get interesting because Arizona's there at 4. At 5's the Chargers. The Vikings, while they really, really like J.J. McCarthy, who's now their quarterback, from a value perspective, they weren't going to be involved in trying to trade up for him. They simply weren't going to go not to 4 or to 5 to leapfrog the Giants. They were making a calculated bet. The Giants aren't going to take him. So Arizona, which have been listening to offers, they stand in and they take Marvin Harrison Jr. The Chargers, who I think were open to moving down and they know that they've got a lot that they had to do, but they were probably realistically going to stand in and take Joe Alt, which they did. Now you're sweating it out if you're Minnesota on, all right, are we right? And they're not going to take J.J. Sure enough, they take Malik Nabers after all the signals that have been out there that they were considering a quarterback there for where they're at. And once those top three guys were off the board, going with Nabers made a lot of sense. At 7, you're not concerned about the Titans at 7. You know they're not in the quarterback bucket. 8, the Falcons surprise everybody. I mean, everybody. And I know it had been speculated upon. I know Rappaport, who was just on the show, had said it before the draft. Hey, don't be surprised. But it always felt to people in the league like a smokescreen. Mm. Like, yeah, you like Michael Penix, but there's no way you're taking him at 8 right after signing Kirk Cousins to a $100 million guaranteed deal. Well, the Falcons were having trade calls. They were looking into trading down. But this is the complicated part, and every GM will tell you, every week you say, oh yeah, just trade out of the pick. You need someone to do it, and you need to get the right value. They end up standing in and realize about 5 minutes onto the clock, we're not able to get out of this pick. They take Michael Penix. Now, if you're the Vikings, you have to be sweating it out a little bit because they had J.J. McCarthy and Michael Penix pretty close on the board. J.J. was above Penix, but they were both guys that the Vikings would have been comfortable taking at 11. Now one of those options is gone, and the team on the clock at 9 is the Bears, who are still not going to trade with you because you're within the division.
Right.
So the Bears clearly are not going to take a quarterback again, but they could have traded out. They don't. They stand and they take Rome Odunze. Now at 10... the risk for the Vikings is, are the Broncos, are the Raiders, is somebody going to leapfrog us, take it, J.J. McCarthy? Right or wrong, the Vikings are under the impression, hey, somebody might be trying to trade this pick. Let's just not take any chances so they move up to 10 and get J.J. McCarthy. But that's the high wire act, pick by pick, as this thing is playing out, that you don't know, really, until the Patriots don't trade with you at 3, you don't 100% know how this is going out. But that's why you strategize and you have everything in place. And now the next drama in Minnesota, besides Justin Jefferson's contract, will be, is it J.J. or is it Sam Darnold as your week one starting quarterback? All right. It's been a fantastic show. Thank you to you guys for having me here. Thanks to everybody for watching and listening. Thank you to Jarvis Landry, Dan Murphy, Steve Ashburner, Ian Rappaport for all joining the show. We got a lot tomorrow, too. We're excited. Tom Papa. Comedian, nice. Big football fan. He's going to be sitting in that chair right there. Looking forward to talking with Tom Papa. Chase Daniel, who does a great job with his quarterback breakdowns, he is going to be on the show as well as Mike Garofolo, my fellow NFL Network insider. We shall return tomorrow on the Rich Eisen Show, which apparently ends in 20 seconds because I thought the out was 55. It's a 55-20.
Sam Darnold or McCarthy week one go?
That's what you're going to leave me with for the next 10 seconds here? I think it depends on their ready, how ready they feel J.J. McCarthy is. Mm. I definitely wouldn't rule out J.J. McCarthy being the quarterback. And that's the end of the show.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you were only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just been handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.